Hi, this is Steve Gaskin, one of the directors from the Crime Lab. I had the privilege of being a Detective Chief Inspector in the Met Police for a long time. This very short podcast is called The One That Got Away, or The One That Thought It Got Away, which it didn't. Way back in 1988, I was appointed as a DI and I went to Battersea Police Station. In case you don't know, that's in southwest London. Socioeconomically, quite varied, quite diverse. Anyway, on my first day, on the 12th of December 1988, there was a horrendous train crash, and that involved 38 people dying on the trackside. And of course, that was one of the things that I got involved in straight away. So that took up a lot of time, a very, very sad case. Anyway, as that finished, we got an allegation of a serious sexual assault. And the policy in the Metropolitan Police at that time was that it had to be investigated, and rightly so, by a detective inspector, i.e. me. So I picked from Battersea Police Station. I'd worked with both these individuals in the past, and these were two fantastic detectives, two of the best I think I've ever worked with. One was called Pat Knight, and the other one was called Garrett Parry. Anyway, this was a terrible attack. All serious sexual assaults are awful. And it was my job to detect the person concerned and also keep the victim up to date, which is exactly what we could. Which is exactly what we did do. And you need to hear me clearly here. The worst thing is, of course, for the victims and the victims' relatives is dealing with all that horrific trauma. At the same time, and this is part of my nature and my metabolism, is of course I wanted to solve it as quickly as I possibly could. So we made a huge amount of inquiries. At the time, in 1988, offender profiling was fairly new. And then to my horror, exactly 1 week after that, there was another attack, and they were stranger attacks, what is known in the sort of psychology world as blitz attacks. So as a result of that, I was then authorised to marshal more investigators to try and solve that. And we tried everything. And it was quite obvious from a geographical profiling point of view, from listening to everything and looking at all the surrounding circumstances, that this was a local attacker. In 1988, DNA was fairly rare then. It hadn't really started and it was not really being used for criminal purposes. However, what you could do is, with a sample, is to take a blood grouping, which still doesn't prove anything conclusively. Anyway, the bottom line is, as a result of extreme hard work by everyone, we were in a position to arrest someone. This was about 3 to 4 weeks into the inquiry, and the two victims were, we checked, they didn't know each other. And they were put, this man that had been arrested was put onto an identification parade. And sadly, he was not picked out, and further inquiries revealed it could not have been the right person. When you investigate a case like this, it is heavily supervised. In other words, we did as much as we possibly could, and then the trail, if you like, went cold. That doesn't mean to say that the case is put away per se, but you have to do a report, and that is monitored by a detective chief superintendent, a very senior ranking officer at our area headquarters, and I remember it rightly. In fact, he called me up to headquarters and I went with the file and just said, "You've exhausted all of the inquiries you could possibly do." And so that wasn't the end of it. I then, over the years and months, I left Battersea Police Station, so did everyone, and everyone moves on. But as I say, the case is kept alive. Anyway, the next thing that happened, and you have to, the years roll by, and you're looking around about 2010. I had retired by then, and I was sitting in my house in Norfolk, and I got a phone call from a place called Tintagel House. Now, that used to be the place where disciplinary hearings were heard, and so that was what I thought, is that there was something wrong with, I'd done something wrong or something, quite a guilty conscience, which I shouldn't really have. Anyway, it was far better than I ever anticipated. What happened is that the samples from that case way back in 1988 are being kept, and a guy goes into a supermarket in Glasgow, gets involved in an altercation, tries to hit someone with a whiskey bottle. Lo and behold, he's arrested for threatening behaviour and assault. He's taken to a Scottish police station. A mouth swab or a buccal swab was taken, and bingo. This shows the man being responsible for two serious sexual offences way back in 1988. And when you retire, you maybe hang your boots up, but nevertheless, that was what I thought, the one that got away. It was quite curious then, because a detective came to see me from London. I re-signed my statements, went over the case files, and we were told that the defence were going to attack, because it was quite a strong case, we're going to attack the continuity of the evidence. And so if you're interested in true crime, that is really, really important. The continuity from the time these swabs are taken, by whom, how were they recorded, where were they stored, is there any chance that they could have been cross-contaminated with the passage of time? The other curious thing is the detective that was investigating this said to me, have you got a copy of your disciplinary record when you're in the Met? And that is really curious, because you're not issued with that when you retire. You're issued with a leaving certificate looking at how many years you've served and the state of your conduct, which, by the way, was exemplary, and you're given your fingerprints back. There's nothing about discipline records. And of course, because of some of the nature of the work that I was involved in, yes, I got several complaints, none of which were ever founded. It's a classic defence. If someone is guilty, then what they will do is they will attack the evidence as much as possible. So you can imagine, I was absolutely delighted, not for me, for the two victims, is to put in some finality, which is really, really good. I used to love, as an officer, is going along to court and playing what I call mental gymnastics. In other words, I liked taking on eminent counsels, QCs, Queen's Counsels, and I could hold my own. But as we got closer and closer to the trial that was due to be heard at Blackfriars Crown Court, so I was going to travel down on the train, I started getting a bit anxious, and I must admit that, because I'd not given evidence for a considerable amount of time. Anyway, as I got closer to the Crown Court at Blackfriars in London, just as I was getting off the train, the officer in charge of the case said, don't worry, he's changed his plea to guilty, and I'll let you know what happens in the end. And finally, I got a phone call from the officer in the case telling me that this man had changed his plea and was sent to prison for 15 years. So you can see the severity of that. And that is the good news. And I wonder, you see, we've got DNA. Scenes are preserved a lot better than they used to be. Old samples are. And I'm hoping, really, that a lot of people that commit offences cannot hide behind things they wish to. And eventually, I hope that forensic science gets even better, and there will be not one case where someone got away with it, or so they thought.